Okay, Dad, restart.
Okay, continuing on my VA-164 Ghost Rider tour off the aircraft carrier Riskany, I had made, of course, got to the point where I was pretty confident that I was a good pilot and that I would survive, and I found out that that's how you get shot down. I realized that when my wingman said to me, he said, "You know, XO, let me tell you something. You mind if I talk to you personally?" I said, "What do you mean, Mick?" He said, I said, "No, go ahead." And he said, "You're a crazy man." He said, "You're doing things out there you tell us not to do." And I said, "Okay, Mick, thanks a lot." So I got the squadron together. I said, "Let me tell you something. I want to apologize to all you guys because I found out that I'm thinking I'm invincible, and that's the time you lose it. And so as a result, I promise to you that I'm not going to be breaking any more rules, and I don't want you to do it either." When I diverted one time with my wingman from the primary target, we were on an armed reconnaissance, I found a bridge. The weather was clear, and he and I dove on a bridge, and all of a sudden, that must have been a Czech CPU, 5,000 rounds a minute tracers were coming right over my canopy, and I said, "Mick, break it off." Now, one of the things Bill Surface told me, he said, "You remember that the anti-aircraft gunners are human. They get excited like you do, and after you leave, they sit down and light up a cigarette, and that's the time you want to come back and hit them. Come out of the sun real fast, and they won't be ready." So we went away for about 15 to 20 minutes, and then came back, rolled out of the sun, and I said, "Mick, drop with me." We dropped 12 500-pound bombs right where I had the flak sight mark. We had all kinds of secondary explosions, and we blew the hell out of them. And that's one time when we had the advantage by using good judgment. One of the things we did when we shot the Shrike was because the Vietnamese knew that the Shrike would track the radar signal, they'd turn off the radar, and then the missile would go ballistic. And so there's quite a very expensive missile not doing any good. So we put some rocket pods on, and every time we fired a Shrike, we would say shotgun, so that everybody in our strike group would know that we shot a Shrike and not to worry about it being a missile from an enemy airplane. So we would say shotgun and fire the rocket. They'd turn off their radar. They'd turn it on again, would say shotgun, fire another rocket. And that seemed to work pretty good. And so it wasn't until I made a trip just last month to Vietnam, when I talked to a missile operator, found out that what they were doing was kind of interesting. And it was a cat and mouse game that we were playing, and found out later that they didn't turn off their radar, they just turned their antenna so it wouldn't be going in our place, so they immediately swung it around and shot another SAM at us. I was very fortunate in meeting a missile operator. He was my guide's uncle, and he was the one of the missile operators, and we talked about all of the tactics that they used and all the anti-tactics that we used and counter-tactics and so forth. So it was very enlightening and very good discussion. I'm glad I had that opportunity. One of the things that I noticed coming off of targets, we never flew low. That's where you're going to get killed. But one time I got driven down low, and I was making a lot of turns, and I happened to fly over roofs of these villages, and I didn't realize, I was shocked to see all these people on their backs with guns shooting up in the air. So they were doing a primitive thing, but that's the way you can get blown out of the sky also. I had found a radar van that was tucked under some trees, and I was out of bombs, so I called for help, and one of the guys from the other squadron came, and I was directing him by tossing one bomb at a time and trying to mark the target. I said, "Okay, now that you know where it is, go ahead and drop the rest of your bombs." He says, and they were shooting at us then, and he says, "I'm all out of bombs, I'm all out of balls, and I'm heading back to the ship." So that was kind of interesting.
Hey, Dad, you know, the football story, I've heard probably, ever since you know, I've heard it forever.
Uh-huh.
And can I ask you some more questions about that?
Oh, sure, yeah.
When the ball approached you, from what direction did it come and at what speed?
Well, typically? It didn't come. It just appeared. You know, you'd be fine.
So it
and
materialized
all of a sudden,
on your. How far away was it usually from you?
It would sometimes just kind of fly over our wing. I would say it was probably about a foot and a half or 2 feet in diameter. It was kind of whitish, and it would just fly by your airplane when you. It didn't look like it was attacking you. It didn't look like.
Did it look like metal, or like with white paint?
It looked like metal, yeah. And see, they were saying they were weather balloons. Well, I mean, I don't know that they'd be every time you go up there, they're throwing weather balloons up in the air and stuff like that. And I don't know, maybe it was some kind of a defensive mechanism that the Vietnamese had that didn't work. But we didn't know what they were. There was no explanation.
Did they track with you? I mean, how long, for how many miles would they be with you?
Oh, they would be with you. They would be
you'd
be flying, all of a sudden it appeared, then it passed over your wing, and that was it. I mean, you couldn't see them coming, and you couldn't see them going. It would be like driving down a road real fast and having a bird fly out in front of you.
Were they moving, or were they stationary?
They appeared to be stationary.
Hmm.
It was hard to tell. I mean, you know, here we were. We're flying, people are shooting at us, and we're turning and all that stuff, and this thing appears, and you don't get a chance to study it. We tried to compare notes. It got to the point where we said, you know something, let's stop talking about it. It's not a threat, and nobody's going to believe us anyway. So it was kind of a weird thing. And we didn't know what to call them, so we called them fooballs.
Did you ask the Vietnamese about what they thought they might be when you went there?
No, I didn't. I didn't even think about it, to be honest with you. Of course, I guess he was a missile operator. He might have known. But one of the things that he did say, his nephew said, Bill, there's two things that my uncle does not want to talk about. He doesn't want to talk about anything classified. He doesn't want to talk about anything political. So we kept it in that vein.
Huh.
Although he did tell me that when the B-52s toward the end of the war, and that's really what caused the end of the war, the bombing by the B-52s.
The carpet bombing?
Yeah, and when they first came over, he said we couldn't pick them up on radar. Our radar was no good, so we had a Russian come down, and he taught us how to burn through it. And when that happened, we shot down three B-52s. But he didn't go into details on, you know, how they did it.
Regarding the Defense Secretary McNamara.
McNamara came aboard ship, and he was a bean. We called him a beans and a bullet guy. He said, well, how many strikes do you fly a day, and what were the tonnage of your bombs? You know, that's not what's really important. What's important is how many good targets did you have, and how many targets did you destroy? And so he was putting everything in an accounting bracket. And he said, I notice you're asking for 2,000-pound bombs, but you don't show any usage of 2,000-pound bombs. I said, no, we don't. Because we couldn't get them, and the ones we had, we saved them for the bigger bridges. But you're not going to get usage because we had to be discretionary on how we use these things. He said, well, I didn't know about that. But we did have a shortage of 2,000-pound bombs. As a matter of fact, we had shortage of the regular Mark 80 series bombs. They're designed for jets or aerodynamically designed, so they started shipping World War II fat bombs, 250-pound bombs that had to be banded and hung under your jet that slowed you down quite a bit. So we dropped a lot of those because they were running short of the Mark 80 series bombs.
Well, tell me some of your favorite stories about Compton. You know, the books about Compton, the stories are that he was he didn't think he could ever be shot down, how he flew around Hanoi Power Plant after McCain got shot down.
True. You know, when they were on a strike in Haiphong, Haiphong's on the coast in the city, and we had a pilot that was shot down, and Brian kept circling, and McCain, this was on Hug the Deck, where they asked McCain about Compton, and when he said that the guy's a madman doing that, he said, can't believe that he thought he was invincible. And when they questioned Brian about it, he said, well, you know, you know the way these politicians, he said, you know the way these politicians talk, they always tell you a bunch of crap. But
yeah.
Brian was smart. He was he graduated the head of his class or pretty close to it. He was very intelligent, and he really was in more esteem than the commander of the air wing at that time. So the admiral's staff really confided in Brian Compton and always took his advice and always talked to him. And Brian was really the real leader of the air wing. He was such a knowledgeable and such a brave man. And he's the one that had told us about the tactics to use against the SAM. And, you know, that we were told to use a barrel roll. And he said, well, no, just stick it in a real steep pull-up, and that's what we did. One time when, I found some targets that were kind of near the sanctuary and places that we weren't allowed to bomb on the Chinese border. And I came back, and I was debriefing, and I moved everything about 20 miles south of that so I wouldn't get court-martialed. And so Brian said, Magic, he said, where'd you get these things? And I told him, I said, well, you go up there, turn off your IFF so our own forces don't track you. And did you get shot at? I said, no, nobody shot at me. And he went up there, he came back with 32 holes in his airplane. He said, I thought you told me they weren't shooting. I said, weren't shooting at the time I was there.
Well, you had 88 SAM missiles shot at you?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, time I came back from a hop, I would log it in my logbook, the number of SAMs that were shot at me. Now, there were a number of SAMs shot at the whole strike group. Like if we went up to Hanoi, there might be 30, 40 SAMs shot at us. But I just logged the ones that were shot at me personally.
How many feet long are those?
They're about, I'd say they're about
15,
40
20?
Feet long, 42 feet 40? Long. They're about the size of a telephone pole.
And
that's
how,
what we call them, flying telephone poles.
Are they about 2 feet thick or like as thin as a telephone pole?
About 18
pole?
Inches thick. Yeah.
And they go 1,800 miles an hour?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And they lock onto your jet exhaust or what?
They lock onto your physical target. See, we had some of our countermeasures was that we had a thing called ALQ-51 and APR-27. They would slew our image. So when the missile operator would look on his radar, he'd see an image and it shoot at it. It was a false image that was created by this equipment. It was called the shoehorn equipment. And we also had chaff. And to be honest with you, chaff was more effective. That's little pieces of aluminum. And we had 12 cartridges in our airplane. And every time they shot a SAM, would press a button, and it would put out chaff, and the SAM would hit toward the chaff. And as a matter of fact, that's what the B-52s were using. They were loading the whole sky with chaff, and they couldn't pick up the B-52s, you know, toward the end of the war.
Huh.
So we had our countermeasures that we used, but nobody ever proved that the Vietnamese could track us by using our radar altimeter or our transponder. But
wasn't the spy giving them all the codes? No, when they were sitting there drinking coffee.
Oh, well, now let me tell you something. We had VA-163 go on a strike up to the power plant in Hanoi, and they were firing a missile that would home in on the television crosshairs. In other words, if the operator, it was a little Sony transmitter and the receiver, if you would put the crosshairs on a window and lock it, then that missile that was fired would hit it. Well, when they went up there, they found the whole area clouded with smoke. The Vietnamese had put smoke pots around. And because of that, they weren't able to use their, it was called the walleye missile. They weren't able to use it. We had to go in and iron bomb it. And there were times when I was scheduled to hit a surface-to-air missile site and it would be vacant. Or all of a sudden, we would get shot at when we didn't expect to get shot at. And I would come back and tell the guys in the squadron, you know, these Vietnamese are clever. They're diabolic. I can't believe how smart they are. It wasn't later till we realized that Walker was giving real-time information to the Vietnamese. And the way they did it is we had a system called...
Hey, Dad, hold that thought. We're going to break now.